What is going on, my party people up in here? We are back with another exciting, thrilling, well, I don't know if it's thrilling, just because for Burgess is kind of like dead to the world right now, but for me, it's thrilling. It's another episode of Between the Tackles. As always, I am your host, Hogan. And I don't know if you guys heard Maverick was just barking. He's a little excited because he can hear me talking in the basement. But enough about me. I mean, I'm 3-0 from last week, so I'm feeling good. I know you and Manish were not as lucky. But Burge, my man, it's been a minute. How you doing?
Well, I am barely awake right now. If you're looking at this on YouTube, like my eyes are probably like half closed. But no, it's good to be back. I had to sit out last week due to some work requirements. So it's good to be back to talk some football with you. You make the comment about being all 3-0 after your nice goose egg you had the week before. Still went 2-1. We'll get into that a little bit later in the episode. This is the first week that your BTT boys were in the positive side and not under 500 for the week. So looking forward to talking about that with you, buddy.
Yeah, all three of us. And in case you guys haven't noticed, our buddy, our good friend, our newest co-host, I'll throw him in there. He could be a co-host if he wants to be. Manish Mehta is he's taking the day off. He's on assignment, as we like to say in the podcasting world, and he knows what he's on assignment for. We miss him, but we wish him well. You know, he's got some duties to take care of. But speaking of duties, you know who just dropped another massive duty in the NFL there, Birch? You know who I'm talking about? The team I love to hate. That's right. I'm talking about those goddamn Tennessee Titans. You know, you guys just, I had my target set on Jacksonville for a while, and then I made some Jacksonville friends, and I got off the Jacksonville train of hate over there, even though they deserve it this year with the way they're starting their team, or their record, I should say. But now, the Tennessee Titans, you did my boy Vrabel dirty. You canned him when you shouldn't have. You blew up the team, and now you trade DeAndre Hopkins to the freaking Chiefs of all teams. Are you kidding me? I already loathe you entirely. What is it? The Grinch said that quote there. Loathe entirely. I freaking loathe you. Now I just straight up hate you. Like, what the hell, man? It's bad enough. The Chiefs are 6-0. They're the last unbeaten team in the NFL. Burgess, talk me off the cliff here, man. Is DeAndre Hopkins going to make a difference in Kansas City? What the hell's going on?
Well, given what they have there in Kansas City as it stands right now, I mean, Juju Smith-Schuster was signed, hurt. Rashee Rice, they're probably their best receiver on their team, hurt. Xavier Worthy is a very promising rookie. Loved what I've seen out of him. Outside of that, who else do they really have to catch the ball from Patrick Mahomes? And to date, we were talking about this right before we hit the record button about Patrick Mahomes' performance this year. 6 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. The stats are reflective of what he has to throw to. Travis Kelce hasn't been the same player that he's been in years past. So I think the Chiefs needed to make a move like this. The low risk, high reward type move for the Kansas City Chiefs, who are clearly going for the three-peat this year. I just think DeAndre Hopkins is cooked. I think, you know, he's 32, going on 33 years old. He was kind of bounced. I mean, he didn't really bounce around, but he went to the Titans after his stint with the Cardinals. Did have 1,000 yards last year, but, you know, he's not the kind, you're not wowed by him at this point anymore. I think he's going to be an effective player for the Kansas City Chiefs once he gets up to speed with everything there. Do I think it all of a sudden makes a massive jump in their odds to win a Super Bowl? No, I don't think it really, in the grand scheme of it, makes that big of a difference for them. It is pretty crappy that the Titans did that for a measly fifth-round pick that could jump to a fourth-round pick if he play. I think it's if he plays 60% of the snaps the rest of the season and the Chiefs make the Super Bowl, it goes from a fifth to a fourth-round pick. You know, I don't want to say this, but it's been in my head since the trade happened, and you're probably going to yell at me for it, but it does have a little bit of a feel like when the Patriots traded for Randy Moss. You get where I'm going with that? It's that past 30 elite receiver. Now, DeAndre Hopkins is not Randy Moss. That's not the type of comparison I'm trying to make here. But it's getting that former elite number one wide receiver at a bargain because he's older and has been underperforming in the location where he was. That's where I come from when I say this could be a high reward type move for basically pennies for a team like Kansas City, who is clearly, obviously, in their window, going for the three-peat to do something that I don't believe it's ever been done in the NFL. So, personally, I think DeAndre Hopkins is washed, so he's not going to make, you're not going to be seeing that big of a difference. I could be wrong. I've been wrong plenty of times before on this podcast, but at the end of the day, it's an effective body for Patrick Mahomes to throw to as the receivers just continue to go down with injuries.
Yeah, I'm curious where you were talking about the Randy Moss comparison there, and I was trying to think in my head immediately. Of course, the naysayer in me was like, no way, no chance, that's not going to happen. But comparatively, it's interesting because obviously Randy Moss joined a already pretty decent Patriots team in that preseason there for 2007 for the Patriots, where they had already acquired Wes Welker. They had already signed Dante Stallworth. They had the pieces around Brady where I was already excited about the season, and Randy Moss just put it over the top. Mm-hmm. Where if you look at the Chiefs right now, like you said, they don't have a lot of guys that are immediate gigantic threats, where Rice is hurt and then Hollywood Brown was hurt. He hasn't even played a snap for the Chiefs this season. But if you look at it where Hopkins could be that complimentary guy to put in an offense with a Travis Kelce, with an Xavier Worthy, plus you look at the Chiefs, they're undefeated. They're not doing it insanely impressively, but their ability to adapt to what they are good at is probably bar none to anybody else in the NFL right now. Similar to what the Patriots did for the longest time with their dynasty, right? Where they adapted over time. Brady wasn't throwing 50 touchdowns every year. It was, you know, Mahomes is clearly not on pace for 50 touchdowns this year with, like you said, he's got 6 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. But Hopkins could be that guy that really sets them apart and gets Mahomes back on track with his normal stats, or you don't know. It just, for me, you don't want to see I don't want to see the Chiefs win. I already hate the Tennessee Titans. This was just a marriage in hell for me with the way that I woke up today and saw the news where Hopkins got traded the way he did. So screw you, Titans. Thanks for ruining my day. And I hope the Chiefs do not continue to be undefeated. I hope they lose, and I hope they don't make the Super Bowl. And I'm just a bitter New England fan. Call me out. That's fine. I'm just going to say what I have to say. So screw you, Chiefs. Screw you, Titans.
Like I said, biggest Buffalo Bills hater here, man. But if they play the Chiefs in the playoffs, I'm circling the wagons, baby. You're never going to hear me say that again. But one thing I want to throw out, the Chiefs are 6-0. Patrick Mahomes has thrown an interception in every game this year.
Yeah.
In every game this year with 2 games with multiple interceptions. Like, to me, that's like unheard of for Patrick Mahomes. And the fact that this team is still 6-0 just goes to show you that they are winning in different ways. Got to also remember, doesn't have his starting running back either. Isaiah Pacheco went down, I think, with his fibula, broke his fibula early in the season. Cursed my fantasy team into doom for the year. So their defense obviously is playing well. And if you're getting a guy in here like this, that's why, I told you, dude, like, it just screamed. It made sense for the Chiefs 100% to make this type of move.
Yeah, quick shout out to Spags there, defensive coordinator, Spagnuolo. Mm-hmm. He might go down as the greatest defensive coordinator of all time if you think about his resume at this point with what he did to the Patriots and the Giants Super Bowl. And then on top of that, what he's been doing with this Kansas City defense the last, he's been there 5-6 years now at this point. So he's on par with possibly, I'm putting on record, I'll say it right now, he's probably the greatest defensive coordinator of all time. There's just no way to beat around that bush. But you brought up the injury, obviously, to Pacheco there, the starting running back. Let's move on to another injury that kind of is very, I have to be careful about this. I don't want to be dicey, but it's unfortunate. The injury is unfortunate. And at the end of the day, he is a human being. And, you know, I don't wish insanely ill will on many people. But I, of course, am talking about the Deshaun Watson injury. Burgess, I saw this live and it was absolutely disgusting seeing that, you know, shotgun snap where just the you could see the Achilles just pop right up his leg, and it was just like I wanted to vomit everywhere. Puke city, just absolutely disgusting. You never want to see that, obviously. What does this mean going forward for the Cleveland Browns, where they're already inept as they are, being what, 1-6 at this point. They went to Dorian Thomas Robinson, whatever the heck his name is, the backup there. He got hurt, and then Jameis Winston came in. They've already come out and said that Jameis slinging, what is it, 30 for 30, Jameis Winston, 30 touchdowns, 30 interceptions. I love bringing up that stat about him. He's going to be their starter this weekend. They happened to sign an old buddy of ours off the Chiefs practice squad. You have any idea who I'm talking about?
The Zappy Fever has come to Cleveland. And us here in New England are obviously making a bigger deal about this than probably anybody else in the rest of the league. Just seeing this guy get on an active roster. Oh, he would have done better than Jacoby Brissett through five games here in New England. Like, you know, maybe. I just think it's comical that the kid's got a job again. I mean, he had a couple of, you know, he had 15 seconds of fame here in New England with a couple of back-to-back games where he kind of helped the Patriots in Mac Jones's absence, and then it caused a whole debacle here. But to me, obviously, he's going to be signed there to be a backup. Jameis Winston, you know, for the Cleveland Browns, can't spell his last name without wins. So he said, that's a quote from Jameis Winston himself. So, you know, maybe it helps them. I mean, I've always thought Jameis Winston was a effective quarterback in the league. Yes, he had that season where he threw 30 interceptions. Very bad. But, you know, former number one overall pick. Average quarterback, you'd say, probably. Could he start in the league right now? I think he could. I do believe that he could. I know you may not agree with that. But, like, I think that he could, and he's going to get his chance there in Cleveland. You know, Deshaun Watson obviously is going to be out for the year. I didn't see the injury live. I happen to be like, I'm one of those people that's got to look up those injuries. I did the same thing with Godwin, and I wish that I didn't. But seeing the recoil in that guy's calf as that thing snapped, just like, oh.
Yep.
You feel for the guy. You know, everything else aside, you feel for the guy because that's an Achilles injury for anybody to suffer at any point is a significant injury. They don't call it your Achilles. They don't have the saying Achilles heel for nothing. I mean, you can't walk. You can barely walk without that thing. Like, it's a mess. So I think that, you know, I wish Deshaun the best. I hope he gets better. You know, we could make memes and jokes about this on the podcast, but we're not going to do that. We're just not going to do that. So it'll be interesting to see where Cleveland goes from here. Obviously, I think their season's over, just like every other 1-6 team in the league. Like, they're not going anywhere towards the playoffs. So Jameis Winston's going to get his chance to maybe show something. Maybe he gets to be a bridge quarterback somewhere next year if he does well. Who knows? But, yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting to see where Cleveland goes from here.
That's right. We are
above. And real quick, I know we hadn't talked about this and had it on our agenda, but Jameis Winston also doesn't have Cleveland's former number one receiver. I don't know if you guys touched on that last week, but like
Mari Cooper, yeah,
in Buffalo now, like, who's he throwing to? Jerry Jeudy? Like,
great question. Yeah, pretty much at this point it's Jerry Jeudy. I was gonna say, we're not gonna make any massage jokes on here. We're just gonna talk about the guy who likes to steal crab legs and eat W's or whatever that sign he did. I don't know, whatever he did. He's a freaking clown. He is a clown, but he is entertainment in its finest form with the Cleveland Browns there. So we'll see what happens with that. But let's move on to our next subject here. Kind of a recent firing, actually the first and only head coach, I believe, to be let go so far this season. I, of course, am talking about Robert Saleh, who was formerly the New York Jets head coach. And he was actually spotted with his old buddy Matt LaFleur with the Green Bay Packers recently. More surprising than anything is he was spotted hanging out with the offense. Burgess, do we have a case of a new age Matt Patricia on our hands going on in Green Bay? Or what the hell is going on here?
Why are you trying to give me PTSD on our Wednesday night recording here? All right. I don't want to ever think about a defensive coordinator coaching and calling plays on the offense. Now, that's not what Robert Saleh is going to be doing with the Green Bay Packers. Everybody knows Matt LaFleur is the guy that calls the plays and does all that. I think there must have been a relationship there with them in the past, obviously, with Kyle Shanahan. LaFleur comes from that tree of coaching, so I'm sure there was some relationship there. can't hurt. The move can't hurt. I think I personally think Robert Saleh is a good coach, especially defensively. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of role he ends up filling out there in Green Bay. I don't think it'll be a major one, but it's why not bring in another guy to that you know and respect and are familiar with to help your operation kind of steamroll down the regular season.
Are you more surprised that San Francisco didn't give him a call to come back and hang out with their defense where they're kind of in need at this point?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I figured that would have been a no-brainer decision for Kyle Shanahan out in San Francisco. But, I mean, I wanted the New England Patriots to call the guy up and be like, come up to New England, help out our defense, which has clearly been struggling, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But, like, a move like this just makes sense. I think he got a raw deal in New York, so I'm happy to see that he got back into the league as quickly as he did, albeit in a minor role. I think we'll see him in some sort of defensive position next year. For some team, we'll hire him back because, like I said, I think he's a good coach.
Very true, very true. Well, staying on the subject of New York and the Jets and shenanigans as usual, we got them coming up on the Patriots schedule this weekend, and as of right now, newly added to the injury report is one and only Aaron GM Rodgers. That's what I'm going to call him going forward, since obviously he's the GM of the New York Jets now, wheeling and dealing to get his guy Devontae Adams to come hang out with him so they can get blown out by the Steelers on that Sunday night game, which I went to bed at halftime, and boy, am I glad I did, because I woke up to a fun little surprise there. Shout out to the Steelers, actually. They gave me – that was the 3-0 victory I got there for my picks. But anyway, going back to the Jets here, Aaron Rodgers landing himself on the injury report. I think he's on the injury report for like 14 different things at this point. His shoulder, his ankle, his knee, his hip. The guy's no spring chicken, so it's not surprising that he's banged up, especially with the way that offensive line's been protecting him. But, Burgess, what does this injury mean for the Jets – this weekend, which I know we'll get into the game a little bit more later on, but at the same time, if he misses multiple weeks, is Tyrod Taylor the new guy for the New York Jets?
The timing of this is very interesting for his injuries to come up. I don't want to sit here, call the guy a liar and say that he's not dealing with it, with something, but week after his coach gets fired, they make a trade for his boy, Devontae Adams from Green Bay. We all know who made that decision. Joe Douglas is an absolute puppet there in New York. He ain't calling the shots. Aaron Rodgers is calling the shots. 40-year-old Aaron Rodgers, a quarterback who played, six plays last year, and this year has a worse record than Zach Wilson had through the same amount of games last year. And he's all of a sudden hurt because they just got blown out on Sunday Night Football in primetime. Something's a little fishy there. Sorry, I really can't stand that guy. I really cannot stand that guy. I can't stand him as a person, not even just an athlete. I can't stand the way he carries himself. Pretentious ass. That's exactly what I think about him when I think of the words Aaron Rodgers. But if he's legitimately hurt and there's serious issues with him possibly missing time, it doesn't sound like that's the case. He was limited in a walkthrough today, but I guess according to the coach Olbrich there, that his hamstring flared up at some point during the game Sunday night, which, you know, you don't have your hamstring, your ability to be mobile back there is definitely going to take a hit. And Aaron Rodgers, I think we've seen, needs to still be able to showcase some of that he has left in the tank at age 40 to be effective for the Jets. The Jets are also another team. I mean, you look at the AFC East, outside of Buffalo, the entire division is just a crapshoot. We thought it was going to be a decently competitive division, and then Tua gets hurt, and then the Jets have obviously underachieved to this point. If Tyrod Taylor has to go in there, I mean, who knows what it's going to look like? Could it look better? Yeah, absolutely, it could look better. Aaron Rodgers is 40 years old, and I think that'd be absolutely hilarious if that happens. But, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, you know, when we talk about the picks, I'll have something to say about this game on Sunday, and we'll be able to, you know, see what Aaron Rodgers actually decides to look like should he suit up and play.
That's right. That's right. Well, as Pats fans, obviously we're sitting there going, hey, best case scenario for us, if Rodgers is hurt and he plays, great. And if he's hurt, he doesn't play, great. Maybe we have a chance either way. I don't know at this point. This Patriots team is just inept as it is. But let's move on from the oldest quarterback in the league, and let's go to a young quarterback. See what I did there? Segue. Not too bad if I say so myself. I'm, of course, talking about Bryce Young, the quarterback down in Carolina who unceremoniously got benched. His ass got benched, two, 3 weeks ago for the Red Rocket there, Andy Dalton, which led Carolina to their one and only victory this year over the Raiders that 1 week. And since then, they have commenced their getting destroyed by every team that faces off against them, including an abysmal, 40-7 loss to Marcus Mariota, the backup quarterback for Washington last week. I think my buddy who has Jaden Daniels and Marcus Mariota as his handcuff was on his bench and had like 27 points or something crazy or whatever. And he was rip shit because he started Jaden Daniels, of course, not knowing he'd get hurt. But what does Bryce Young coming back for Carolina mean for the Carolina Panthers, Burge? Is this going to be a turning point for him? Do you think we're going to see any kind of improvement? Obviously, the circumstances of how and why he is starting again, I found out just pre-recording, was obviously Andy Dalton was involved in a car accident. He is okay. He was with his family and everything like that. Thank God he's all good and the family's all good. But where he banged up his, I think they said his thumb or something, that he's unable to go right now. They were planning on staying with Dalton going forward. That's what the report said, is that this was not, you know, Bryce Young was not the plan to go back to him anytime soon. They're kind of forced to go back to him. What does this mean for Carolina this week and going forward?
I don't think it's as much what it means for Carolina, but what it means for Bryce Young and his career prospects. I mean, obviously, it's his second year in the league. He's still very young. But when you get benched in the second year of the in the league, when you're the number one overall pick, it is a very bad look as to where you sit, especially on a team as bad as Carolina and Andy freaking Dalton as your backup. But that being said, you know, this is an opportunity for Bryce Young now. He's getting another chance. Guys get hurt. You get the opportunity. Look what happened with Tom Brady. Drew Bledsoe almost dies. He comes into the game and he never gives the job back. This is Bryce Young's opportunity to get his job back, to come out and play well on Sunday and prove that he belongs to be their quarterback. Now, I don't think that's going to happen. No, I don't think that's going to happen because I think Carolina is just such a mess that you can put anybody in there and it's gonna they're not going to win a game. But at the same time, as we've learned up here in New England over the past couple of weeks, it's not about the end result of the game. It's about what you see in that 60 minutes from your young quarterback. And if they start seeing some glimpses that, hey, he took a couple of weeks off, worked on some things, and now all of a sudden you're starting to see a little bit of flashes, he may not give the job back to Andy Dalton at that point. So I think it's a massive opportunity for Bryce Young to really get back into the starting role there in Carolina. But on the flip side, if it goes really bad, I don't think he's coming back to Carolina next year. I think it's that. I think it has that much of a weight on this that they could look to move on from him in the offseason.
Yeah, the potential is definitely there because obviously there was a lot of discussion about whether they were going to trade him away initially when he got benched earlier this year. Mm-hmm. And obviously all the talking heads were saying how much of a failure he's been and the team let him down. It's very reminiscent from my perspective of kind of the Mac Jones saga with what happened with him in New England, right? Where it's, I think the talent's there with Bryce Young clearly because he was the number one pick for a reason. He obviously led Alabama the way he did to was it multiple national titles or at least one, whatever it was. He won a Heisman. The talent is obviously there. It could be the setting. It could be something. And I certainly am looking at this week as he's not getting any favors thrown his way by starting against Denver's defense the way that they've been playing recently, especially if he caught what Denver did last Thursday night to the Saints, where they absolutely destroyed Spencer Rattler and the Saints there. I think they scored 3 points, if that. So I don't feel bad for him because he's an Alabama guy. Screw Alabama. And I don't really care about the Panthers. So it is what it is. But at the same time, I feel a little bit bad for him because he's just thrown into a crap situation. We'll see what happens going forward. But as of right now, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to take a very short break to hear from our sponsors. Don't go anywhere. Between the Tackles, we'll be right back. And we are back here on Between the Tackles. We are talking all news NFL worthy right now. Well, we were talking NFL news. Now we're going to move on to some upcoming. Oh, I lied. We're not going to talk about upcoming. We're going to talk
ahead
about
of yourself
little,
there.
I was going to say, I'm getting ahead of, look at this. I'm already, the ad break happened and I'm thrown for a tizzle over here. I don't know what's happening. We're going to go back to this past weekend and we're going to talk about our Patriots purge, which granted, maybe this is why I want to skip this part, because I don't want to talk about our Patriots with how abysmal they've been this year. I mean, it's already, everything's been horse crap as far as we've seen with product on the field and even off the field, everything that's going on at this point. The Patriots traveled over to London for the international series there. I believe it was the last international series game this season to take on, at this point, pretty much the London Jaguars. They might as well move over there since that's where they play half their games as it is. They got their booty stomped. The game started off, the Patriots were 10-0. They came out of the gates. You and I messaged a little bit saying, hey, they actually look like a competent team. And then that second quarter happened and the sky fell in London for the Patriots. It was 22 unanswered points, 96-yard punt return. The defense let up, 17, 18 straight run plays. I think that was more so into the third or fourth quarter. But what the hell is going on in New England? And is there any way to savor anything this season, or are we packing it up and waiting for that number one overall draft pick at this point?
I think it's packing it up and waiting for that number one overall draft pick, as much as I hate to say that as somebody who watches those games and hoping my team wins. This was just a disgrace, if you ask me. It actually wasn't 22, it was 25 unanswered points if you count the third quarter of this game. To me, the defense is the biggest disappointment. And I know they're dealing with some injuries with Christian Barmore and Jerwan Bentley out for extended periods of time this season. It's not an excuse. The Jaguars were also 1-5 going into this game. They looked awful. And they made this team look elite, if you ask me. Like, you know, they got out to a great start. And like you said, we were talking, this is great. You know, the first quarter, they're 10-0. This feels good. And then the defense decided to just, we're going to go check out Westminster Abbey and forget about this 15-minute quarter of football that we're playing. It was just an absolute joke of a quarter. And, you know, it seemed like it sucked all the momentum out of the offense. The offense forgot how to do anything. And it just, you know, the game got away from them there. I will say, for me, Drake May, again, shined. I thought he played very well in this game, given the circumstances. You know, screw Jalen Polk for the amount of drops that guy had in this game. That ball's thrown right, hit him square in the hands, and he's dropping them. I it's just like, you know, somebody sent a tweet in our fantasy football draft, our WhatsApp chat, and it was Drake May in New England right now, and there's a picture of Matthew Stafford. You think about what Matthew Stafford endured up in Detroit for all those years, being a very, very good quarterback and just having nobody really around him besides Calvin Johnson. Like, he was the only player he really had up there that was as effective for a sustained period of time. And it's like, well, that's true. But Drake May really did impress me. He impressed me with his legs, too. He had a couple of scrambles where he took off with the ball, made a couple of guys miss. I think on one of his runs, he was able to make a couple of guys miss. So, like, I really like what I see from Drake May early on. Like, it's been two games, so it's hard for me to be like, okay, he's the guy. But, like, he's shown me more in two games than Mac Jones showed me that entire first season that he was here. And Mac Jones was really good his first season here. I think he went to the Pro Bowl as an alternate. He went to the Pro Bowl. But the offense and the types of throws that Drake May is making, like pushing the ball down the field accurately, not something we saw Mac Jones ever do up here in New England. And so for me, I can take that away from each of these games now, as long as he continues the upward trajectory of his development playing. It's hard for me to be upset. Through two touchdowns and turn the ball over. He was very, very effective. Offensively, though, the running game, my God, it was non-existent in this game. What did we say at the beginning of the season was going to be the Patriots' bread and butter
on offense? Ground and pound. Ground and pound, baby.
You take out Drake May was their leading rusher with three carries. That is not a recipe for success. Ramondre Stevenson, I think, was dinged up. Obviously, you still, you know, may have explained why he wasn't as effective, but six offensive line combination in six games, I mean, that'll do it. That'll do it too. So, a lot of problems on this team. You know, Elliot Wolf, you know, I'm very interested to see what his plan is, leaving all that money on the table and cap room in the offseason this year to not even truly address that offensive line in any way, or even a receiver outside of KJ freaking Osborne. Like, it's scary. I mean, the best running back on the field on Sunday was Jamichael Hasty, because he caught five balls out of the backfield. The third string running back. I mean, Antonio Gibson did nothing. It was just puke fest. Outside of Drake May salvaged the day for me watching him play. I really look forward to watching that kid play in the future. What did you think about it? I'm really curious where you sit on it. I know the Patriots are who you thought they were going into the season. I took the Kool-Aid week one where I was like, maybe they could go 3-0. Yeah, I was way wrong on that. I just said, like I told you earlier, I'm very wrong on this podcast very often. I was very wrong about that. Manish laughed at me when I said it, and you know, he's not here. I'm sure he's getting his laughs out of it too. But what do you think?
No, for me personally, I mean, it's no vindication for me to be like, haha, puff my chest up. I was right in calling the fact that I thought their ceiling, honestly, going into the season was 3 wins. And obviously that was generous at this point, I think 2 wins is almost going to be pushing the generous. The only team left that I see them possibly beating is the friggin' Tennessee Titans. That's right. Suck it, Titans. I'm talking smack about you again. So I hope that might be the one game that I'm truly rooting for the Patriots to win, as long as it doesn't cost us the number one overall pick. But that being said, I don't get any enjoyment out of seeing them lose the way that they are losing right now. Like I said, I go back to my old mantra of I'm okay with the Patriots getting their asses kicked or losing. And as long as they're competitive, and at least as long as they're fighting. And the biggest problem that I see with this team that will very well segue into the next topic that we're talking about here, Jerod Mayo calling the team soft. He's not inaccurate in that description, where they are a soft team right now. They can't tackle. They can't block. They can't run the ball. The only thing they can do is pass the ball. And Drake May is running for his life half the time because he has to be. He's not getting clean pockets. I mean, there's occasionally they're pass blocking for him, but it's not to a point where we want to see what we're seeing, because they're down by multiple scores. So they have to throw the ball to try and play catch up at this point. They are so inept at so many different phases of the game that it's so putrid watching them that I just don't enjoy it. Because like I said, you don't see that competitive spirit. You don't see that fight. You don't see guys trying their hardest. And even if they fail, at least you're sitting there going, you know what? At least they put it all on the line for you. Like, I don't see guys doing that on this team. You see guys jogging. You see guys, the bullshit after the game with Jalen Polk, you talked about him with his drops, right? He's throwing up peace signs on Instagram afterwards. And then KJ Osborne is sharing texts or tweets or some crap with his agent about how he was supposed to be a healthy scratch on Saturday. And it's like, I one of the things that I said after this game was, you know what? Where are all these people that were clapping and cheering that wanted to drive Bill Belichick out of town? Where did you ever see any of this kind of shit happening when Belichick was the head coach of this team for the 20 plus years that he was here? You didn't see it. And I'm not saying it's to a point, like, I am absolutely not one of those people saying that Jerod Mayo needs to be fired or his job needs to be questioned right now. Give it time. I've always been a firm believer that a coach, no matter who it is, should at least get a season. They should always get a season unless they are completely inept, an Urban Meyer type or
Nathaniel Hackett,
obviously. But like, if you just pull that rug out, I mean, for God's sakes, what was his name? Was it Hugh Jackson that got multiple years when he was 0-16? Like, come on, like, cut me some slack. All right. Got to have patience. You got to wait and see. And the biggest thing you touched on with Elliot Wolf, where they didn't really do a lot of things to address the needs of this team right now. It's hard for me to sit there and criticize them because, like you said, they are who we thought they are. What I'll say finally on this subject for me personally, and I've been kind of touting this all year about Mayo and the coaching staff, because that's who I really want to focus on at this point. We know what the players are. We know the product that's on the field. It's not top tier. You're not going to compete with upper echelon teams. You can't even compete with garbage teams like Jacksonville. It's as simple as that. We just got the shit kicked out of us by Jacksonville. The coaching needs to be stepped up in a way that I think we haven't seen before, because offensively, defensively, and I'll even go after Mayo, they don't make adjustments. They don't do things that they should do. They don't do simple football. And the biggest thing that drives me absolutely crazy is you see a lot of crap on the field that's taught at a Pop Warner level. For example, I go back to, there was a very, very long play where Trevor Lawrence ran. I want to say he rushed for like 16 yards or something. It was a crazy play where they blitzed Marcus Jones off the edge. He had a free shot at Trevor Lawrence. He whiffed on the sack, which should have been fourth down right there. Lawrence scrambled out to his left. Dedrick Wise, who was supposed to have outside containment, you were taught at a freaking Pop Warner level, outside containment is one of the most important things in football, to bring a guy inside the field where, guess what, there are more people to tackle him. The minute you lose outside containment, guess what happens? Trevor Lawrence takes off and get a first down, and the drive continues. And it's stuff like that that you see constantly, week after week after week, with this team, where that's a reason why they've lost six games in a row. And you're going to see them continue to lose games if they don't clean up simple shit like that. And it drives me crazy as a fan, as a former coach, as a former player. I mean, and then just as simple as this will be the last thing I rant about, I promise. The simple as the 2-point conversion timing in that game. You were down multiple scores at that point. You scored the touchdown. They decided to go for two, right? If they had gotten the 2-point conversion, all you needed was 7 to tie it up. I am a firm believer, and you can disagree with me here, but I am a firm believer, you take the points when you can get the points. You had a chance to make that a one possession game. They went for two, they missed it. It's a 9-point game. Now you have to fight and claw and hope that there's an onside kick in there or your defense can get multiple stops. Take the points, go for two when you absolutely have to go for two. It goes back to this stupidity you see running rampant across the NFL, not just with the Patriots, across the NFL, where you see guys not kicking field goals, going for it on fourth down. And granted, I know this has been a touchy subject where we've talked about Dan Campbell and what he does with, obviously, the Detroit Lions. I'm not arguing that fact, but I'm saying, like, you see like Nick Sirianni with the Eagles, where he tries to kick field goals at the wrong moments. They get blocked and return for touchdowns, multiple swings that way. But like, just that basic football, man. And that's where I'm at with the Patriots at this point. You just see too much ineptitude, stupidity, and multiple things that need to be cleaned up at Pop Warner levels that are not being addressed week in and week out. So
I won't be as long-winded as you with this, but
that's fine.
Talking about the points, I totally 100% agree with you. You take the points when they're there. Like, you live to fight another day at that point.
Yeah.
But the league has trended so far in the direction of the nerds and the analytics and the stats and the numbers and the probabilities and everything. That's why you're seeing that shift with all these teams doing what they're doing, because, well, say there's a 60% chance that you get this right. You have if you get the 2 points here, you're going to win the game, versus if you kick the field goal, you got a 45%. Stupid. It's not playing the game and feeling the game out. It's, we're going to go off our stat sheet here, and, you know, probability says we do this, so we're going to do this. Like,
no.
It's analytics have ruined baseball, the sport of baseball. They've crept into the NBA. They've crept into hockey. It's the same thing when you're talking about pulling the goalie at certain periods of time in a game, and you're seeing it in the NFL when it comes to these decisions, when you're avoiding a field goal or, you know, you're going for two, all that. So yeah, that's why they're doing that. In terms of Mayo, I agree with you 100% about giving him time. Like, I've said it before on the podcast that these owners are way too quick to cut the cord from these coaches before they can really instill what they're trying to build. With that being said, the Mayo and his coaching staff look pretty inept right now with what they've done. And you hit it with the lack of adjustments. And you're seeing a little, I want to say it feels like a little bit of a loss of control of the room with where these players are going out publicly and doing these things and the way that they're talking and all that. And yeah, I mean, that's why one of the biggest reasons why I want Bill Belichick to go, because he had control of that, the outside shit. Like, you never saw it. Like, you never heard about it. And if you did, the player paid the price for it. And that's why he, you know, I wish I missed that operation, because I'm sick of listening to these spoiled rotten athletes complain about things and all that. It's like, dude, you're on a 1-6 team. You should not be talking. I don't care who you think you are. Like, Jalen Polk coming out saying he's the best hands in the league, like last week or a week before, and comes out and he drops what? 3 passes, beautiful, beautiful passes right in his hands. He drops them. Like, dude, shut the F up and get better and play football. Don't act like an entitled idiot. But that's the state of the New England Patriots right now, unfortunately, with no Bill Belichick and a head coach in his first time role who's still learning how to go about doing it. He was a player once, so there, you know, he's a player coach type of guy, like a Pete Carroll, where he's a player's coach. Very well could be, but you know, time will be seen. I think people that are calling for his head right now are got a large dose of recency bias in their heads, and it's affecting everything. So
that's the one thing, obviously, that the last thing I'll say on this is that obviously Patriot fans, as we know, are very irrational, and not always objective or not biased in their hot takes and everything like that, because the amount of people that I've seen calling for Mayo's head on a spike to be fired immediately during the game, after the game, everything around the game. They were saying, oh, leave him in London. I mean, that's what they were saying about Doug freaking Peterson 2 weeks ago with Jacksonville after they got smoked by the Chicago Bears over there. And it's just, like I said, whether Mayo is the correct choice or not as the head coach of the New England Patriots, time will tell. But that's the biggest thing that people need to stop and realize, is that they need time to tell. That's it. You can sit here and scream that he's not the right guy, you need to fire him. What are you going to do right now? Who's the savior that's coming in to turn this team around? Like you touched on, they're 1-6. They're not Matt making Patricia. A run. Oh God, stop. What's McDaniels doing? Just threw up in my mouth. God. Anyway, let's move on. I talked about a team that I just mentioned there really quickly, Chicago, who whooped up on the Jacksonville Jaguars a couple weekends ago. Let's get into some big games, big matchups that we're actually looking at that can be exciting for this upcoming weekend, and move on from the Patriots, who are probably not going to be an exciting matchup against the New York Jets. We're looking at the Chicago Bears going against the Washington Commanders. And I want to get your take on this, Burgess, because it's going to be, I looked at this game as potentially one of the best games of the weekend before the injury to Jaden Daniels, obviously, because you got the number one pick, Caleb Williams, leading the Chicago Bears, who started off rough, but it seems like they've slowly starting to turn things around. They're 4-2. They just came off their bye. Like I said, just coming off of smoking Jacksonville over in London. You get the Washington Commanders, which are arguably one of the hottest teams in the NFL right now with the way Jaden Daniels was playing up until he got injured. Marcus Mariota, we touched on it earlier, didn't do too badly, obviously, against the very, very hapless Carolina Panthers. But is this a really big matchup that we're getting ready to see throw down on Sunday afternoon, where we got number one pick versus number two pick, or are we in for a letdown?
If Jaden Daniels plays, I think it's a very, very intriguing matchup. You know, you think about the future of the NFL, we're talking about the future quarterbacks, you know, with, you know, rivalries and this and that. Not to mention, they're on two good teams that are playing really good football right now. So for me, if Jaden Daniels is in there, it's a must watch. It's a must watch to see where these two teams are at, where these two quarterbacks are at, and to see what kind of, performance they each put on. I've been a huge fan of what Washington has done with Jaden Daniels this year so far. Really disappointing that he did get hurt. Not as high on the Chicago Bears, and they started off a little rough there, but they have seemed to put a few things together. They're just the fact that it's 1-2 in this year's draft, two rookie quarterbacks going at it who are playing very well, is definitely intriguing. Do you know Chicago's in last place in the NFC North at 4-2? That division is unbelievable. So if Chicago wants to keep pace in that division to, you know, make a run at the title come January, they're going to need to win this game. And did you have Washington Commanders winning the NFC East in week, what, seven? Week eight? I certainly didn't, but it's great storylines all around, if you ask me.
I didn't have them winning the division at any week of this season, let alone that this late into the season at this point. No, that just speaks to the volume of what Dan Quinn is doing. And obviously we know his pedigree of coaching, what he was able to do with the Legion of Boom with Pete Carroll back in the early 2010s there with that Seattle team that was just monstrous for a few seasons there. And then obviously taking over Atlanta the way he did. And leading them to that Super Bowl, obviously, basically. That we are very fond of that Super Bowl. But, you know, arguably, Dan Quinn has been a very polarizing coach for me outside of that one Atlanta year and the Legion of Boom years. Because you look at what he did with Dallas recently, where he was able to get the most out of Micah Parsons and all of them. But his greatest coaching job as of right now, I have to go with this year with Washington, with what he's been able to do with a rookie quarterback that, you know, I wasn't sold on Jaden Daniels right away. It took me a couple of games to get, you know, on board with what he was able to do. But then on top of that, too, like I said, their defense, I probably couldn't tell you one starter on their defense right now, but he's got them balling out where they're in games, they're fighting with teams that they shouldn't be fighting with. And they very easily could steal that division where the NFC East is looking more like the NFC Least. I mean, at least the AFC Least is looking like it is at this point. But that could be a fascinating game. Obviously, I always hope for everybody to be healthy at all times. You never want to see players get hurt at all. But hopefully Jaden Daniels is able to rock and roll in that game. And if not, maybe Marcus Mariota can make some of that magic happen that happened last week. And we can see a heck of a game there with Chicago taking on Washington. And then the next game that I want to get into that is going to magically segue into our next segment afterwards, which is your picks going into next week. Let's talk about the old rivalry in the NFC that we got there. I'm, of course, talking about the Sunday night game, the Dallas Cowboys taking on the San Francisco 49ers. Is this going to be a really, really good matchup, or is this going to be like very, very much of a put-off game? Because obviously the Cowboys aren't impressing anybody at 3-3 right now. They look good one week and then they get their doors blown out the next. 49ers got to be one of the biggest disappointments in the NFL at 3-4 as of right now, because they were coming off a Super Bowl hangover where they lost the Super Bowl the way they did, but they looked unbeatable at times last year. They're the walking dead right now with all the injuries they've got going on. I think I saw a funny joke. Well, maybe it's not funny, but I saw an interesting meme. What was it the other day that said Ricky Pearsall is the healthiest receiver on the 49ers, and he was shot in the chest like a month ago or something like that, which is absolutely crazy to think about. Yeah, okay, I'm good. I'm glad you're laughing. It makes me feel a little bit bad.
I feel so bad to laugh at that, but the way you said that is
right. But that's the thing, though, is you think about it. He got shot in the preseason. I think it was trying to thwart a robbery attempt,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, I remember and now, yeah.
Obviously he just got reactivated. I think last week was his first game that he played in professionally, where he's a rookie there. But Debo Samuel's out. Brandon Ayuk is now currently out for the entire year. McCaffrey's still not in. Juwan Jennings missed a couple games now at this point. So, Burgess, does this open the door for the Cowboys to kind of kickstart maybe a resurgence here in this season, where they can try and get back on track and get back in the NFC East? Or are the 49ers going to, you know, pull up their big boy pants and take care of business at home and smack around the Cowboys?
If you ask me, just based on the division standings at this point, I would say that this game means more to the Dallas Cowboys than it does to the San Francisco 49ers. The NFC West is a lot closer in terms of all four teams being kind of within a game or two of each other, whereas the Dallas Cowboys are quickly kind of falling behind the Commanders and the Eagles there in the NFC East. So for me, I think it means a lot to the Cowboys. Obviously, you just kind of touched on all of the 49ers issues. It's hard to really call them a disappointment just because of the amount of injuries that they've had to endure through the first 7 weeks of the season. I mean, you've left out George Kittle on that laundry list of names that you named, and he didn't practice today. So, like, he could be missing there too, which is deeply concerning for somebody like Brock Purdy, who's trying to get himself paid after this year. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of ironic, the kind of the way that that kind of played out. It has a chance to be a good game. I think it could very well be a sloppy type game just because of what we've seen the Cowboys do this year and all of the injuries to the San Francisco 49ers on both sides of the ball. So, you know, I have some feelings about this. If you want to, we can move into the pick segment there. You know, we'll talk about the BTT picks for week 8 this week. Hogan, you want to recap last week's
performance? I was going to say, yeah, we'll get into week 8, but before we do, I am briefly going to go over the standings from week 7. We are going to start with our good buddy who is MIA this week, and I, of course, am talking about Manish Mehta, who was 8-4 overall, coming off a previously 3-0 week that he had in week 6. That last week he went with the Falcons versus the Seahawks. Did not go well for you there, Manish. That was a very bad choice. For your next pick there, you got the Cincinnati Bengals -6 versus the Browns. That was a close game, believe it or not. He almost missed on that one, but Cincinnati was able to take advantage late in the game and seal the deal there. That gave him let him go 1-1 to that point. And then he took the Colts -3 versus the Dolphins. Colts ended up pulling that game out by 6 points. It was almost a 3-point game, but they kicked a late field goal. And I was so mad because it would have pushed on that one and he would have been 1-2, but he lucks out and goes 2-1 there. So Manish goes 2-1. That is going to push his overall record to 10-5. Obviously, the updated stats will be put on the graphic going forward on Twitter, X, whatever the heck it's called at this point. And before we get into our recaps, Birch, do you want to read off Manish's picks for this current week?
Yes. So Manish in absentia has submitted picks to us. First pick he has, Green Bay -4.5 against the Jaguars. I like that pick. Mm. Bengals -2 against the Eagles at home. Manish loves picking against his own team. It seems like every week he's picking against his Eagles. And then, of course, I think this is the real reason why he bailed out tonight. He didn't want to have to sit here and defend his Bills -3 pick against at the Seahawks to the biggest Bills hater in the world. So, no, just kidding. But, yeah, that's what we got. Packers -4.5, Bengals -2, Bills -3 for Manish this week.
There you have it. There you have it. We will see how Manish does going into week 8. Secondly, we got to go to my co-host over here, the Burge man himself, who was coming off a 7-5 overall record the previous week. He also went 3-0. How did he do this past week? Mm-hmm. Not 3-0 is my guess, as we talked about. Our buddy here decided to rock and roll with the Patriots +5.5 versus Jacksonville Jaguars. You were probably feeling pretty good about yourself going into the first quarter of that game. And then how did that go afterwards? I know we talked about the game, but how did that go for you? Not good?
No comment.
That's probably for the best. That's for the best. So Burge starting off 0-1 on his picks from last week. However, he gets on track with his next two here. Obviously, he took the Commanders -8 versus the Panthers. That game was won by, I think, 33 points. Mm-hmm. So you were more than okay with your prediction of the blowout incoming there. So that worked out well for you. And then to follow up with the Lions +2.5 versus the Vikings. That was actually a fascinating game that we didn't talk about there, right? The Lions pulled that out at the last second, right? They kicked a field goal to win 31-29 or something.
I didn't realize it was that close. I thought it was...
I think it was 31-29. Yeah, so I was right.
Good thing I got that extra half point in early. Remember, I'll talk about that in the chat.
Yeah, that was you and Manish's little battle that you had. Obviously, he was a little upset, fired up with you, getting 2 points or whatever your shenanigans was there. But either way, the Lions persevered for you, and they pulled it off. They beat the Vikings to take over number one spot in the NFC North there. So you finished the week 2-1 there to bring your overall record to 9-6. Let's get into your picks, buddy. You mentioned one before. You didn't give us a winner there, but you teased it where we talked about the Cowboys versus the 49ers. What do we got?
I have the Cowboys plus 4 points beating the 49ers in San Francisco on Sunday night. I think that the 49ers injuries, they're just too much there. The Cowboys are also coming off a bye week into this game. And I think the sun's about to set on what the 49ers are doing this year. I think that if with the way the injuries have played out, losing Ayuk last week, unless they can somehow magically start getting healthy with some of these guys that have had these injuries for a few weeks now, it's going to be tough sledding, especially, you know, given the Super Bowl hangover that tends to come for the Super Bowl loser in the following year. So give me the Cowboys plus 4. I also have the Texans minus 5 against the Colts. Big Texans guy. Love me some CJ Stroud, Joe Mixon, Stephon Diggs. Now I love that man. I love that man. I hated him for so long. I love that man now. But I love what D'Amico Ryans is doing with the Texans. They've kind of picked up right where they left off last year. So I like them taking down the Colts minus 5. And then my final pick of the week, I'm riding with the guys again. Drake May, don't let me down. Plus 7 at home against the Jets. Screw you, Aaron Rodgers. With your hamstring injury, you can play if you want. Patriots are going to keep this close because the Jets are an absolute dumpster fire as well. And they got blown out the last time. Ain't going to happen again. I'm confident. I'm not going hashtag hitchhike, but I am confident. Plus 7.
All right, you heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Bird is going 0-3. Going 0-3 this week. Obviously, he's as confident as he is, so he's definitely going in the toilet as we speak. All right, we got your picks out of the way. Let's get this rocking and rolling with yours truly over here, who finished the week previous 5-7, losing record. I was 1-2 in the week 6 there, and I needed a miracle. I needed a comeback. I needed to get back on the on track to where I needed to be. And your boy showed up and showed out for what he needed to do. That's right. I went 3-0 last week. All of my picks got locked in. I was feeling hot. I was feeling good. We're rocking and rolling, baby. Steelers plus 2.5 versus the Jets. This is the one game, actually, that I was nervous about because I wasn't sure what Steelers team was going to show up with Russell Wilson taking over and the Jets getting Devontae Adams. Went to bed not feeling good because, like I said, I went to bed at halftime where the Jets were up 15-13, woke up to the Steelers absolutely dominating the Jets in the second half. They got the victory there 37-15. And then, actually, I didn't even get to talk crap to Manish about this. He was making fun of me sitting there. Last week, I predicted that the Chiefs were easily, that's right, I said easily, going to knock off the San Francisco 49ers. And what'd they do? They easily knocked off the San Francisco 49ers. They were plus 1.5. I think that final score was what? 28-14 or something like that? I don't even know if the 49ers scored 14 points there. Either way, another victory for me, 2-0 on that one. And then I actually rolled with Manish's team there, Eagles minus 3 versus the Giants. They smoked them 28-3. So, yeah, that's right. Your boy finished 3-0 last week to give me an overall record of 8-7, which puts me back on top of the positive side of things, not on top of the leaderboard, because that is obviously Manish's train to ride right now. But I'm on the right path where we need to go. So I'm going to keep the good vibes going right into this week's picks.
I had to take my headphones off for that gloating session that you just had to get off your chest.
That's fine.
Negative vibes now for you.
Let's go. Negative. Okay, Mr. 0-3. I don't want to hear it. Anyway, we're going into this week's picks. I got the Baltimore Ravens continuing to rock and roll. They started off 0-2. They're 5-2 now. They won 5 straight. They look unstoppable. They showed up and they balled out against Tampa, who obviously had some very bad injuries in Monday night's game. But they are playing the famous Jameis Winston Browns this week. They're going to Cleveland. Give me Baltimore minus 8.5. I think Lamar and Derrick Henry absolutely just run train on the Cleveland Browns per usual. So that's my first pick there. My second pick, again, I am rocking and rolling with the Pittsburgh Steelers, who are playing at home on Monday night versus the New York Giants. The Giants are lost. They are helpless. They're benching Daniel Jones for Drew Lock. Who knows what's going on in the Meadowlands? I certainly don't know. I certainly don't care. Give me the Pittsburgh Steelers to absolutely annihilate them. Pittsburgh minus 6.5. And then, of course, I have to be that guy that's got to pick an upset in here that has to go against the Vegas rules here, whatever they want to call it, to pick a team that shouldn't win, that's going to win. And this week, I'm going with my upset being the Arizona Cardinals. Now, why are they going to be an upset this week? Well, I'll tell you, very simply, they're going to Miami and they're playing the Dolphins, who they should easily beat on paper, right? Not so fast, my friend. Tua is coming back. And if we see the same old Dolphins that we're used to with Tua when he's healthy, when he's able to ball out and bomb it to Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle and that explosive offense that they've got down there in Miami, watch out for the Dolphins. That being said, give me Kyler Murray. Give me the little man running around playing backyard bullshit football, tossing the ball backwards to Trey McBride and whoever else he's got. Oh, was it Harrison Jr. there out in Arizona? Give me Arizona to upset the Miami Dolphins. Cardinals plus 3.5. So that's my picks right there. I'm feeling another 3-0 week. So I don't know what you're talking about there, Burgess. I'm feeling good about my picks. What are you nervous about?
You know, Call of Duty comes out on Friday. That's not good for Kyler Murray, man.
You know what? The new Call of Duty comes out every year. It is what it is. As long as he doesn't tear his ACL again, I mean, he'll be fine. He's just got to run around and look like a toddler clutching that football and running away from Miami Dolphins. He'll be fine. So that is going to put a wrap on everything that I had to talk about. My friend, do you got anything else before we say goodnight, goodbye, whatever it is, whatever time of day you're listening to this to our viewers out there? Viewers, nah, man. Listeners, just, anything?
I'm ready for week 8 football. It's been a pleasure talking football with you again, Mr. Hogan, despite your having to take my headphones off for a period of time there while you basically just stroked that ego of yours. You know, you got to do what you got to do. I'm not going to listen to it. So, yeah.
You'll hear it. You'll hear it no matter what.
Let's go, Drake Bay.
I mean, sure, I don't think it's going to happen, but, you know, like I said, I'm smelling 0-3 for you this week. I'm feeling good about that. Put it on the record right now. Put that as my fourth peg, that Burgess is going to go 0-3 right there. That'll give me a nice little 4-0 victory going into next week. But for you guys out there listening, thank you, as always, for hanging out with us. Manish, we missed you this week. Hopefully, he'll be back next week. Hopefully, he will not be on assignment. He is not hitchhiking, in case any of our viewers out there, listeners, are worried that's what he's doing. He's not, unless he is and we just don't know about it. But that's gonna put a wrap on this sucker. So as always, go Patriots.
Go Drake May.
No, not this week. I can't root for you to get a victory in our pick 'em league. So not this week. But I'm certainly not gonna root for the Jets. You're not gonna catch me doing that. But we will see you all next week. We love you. We appreciate you. Burgess,
peace.
Later.